Welcome back to Horoscope Witch. It's Mal, and welcome to my first Q&A. I thought it was about time to do some sort of Q&A, and I personally really like listening to other podcasters answer questions and all the spiritual inquiries and things like that. So I thought it was about time that I asked you guys if you have any questions for me. And I asked you guys on Instagram probably last week if you had any questions about astrology, tarot, intuition, things like that. And you guys asked me some really, really awesome things. So thank you so much. And we'll get to those questions in a second. Besides that, I just wanted to kind of check in with you guys. And, you know, to be honest, this morning when I went to yoga, my yoga teacher asked us, like, to kind of tune into our bodies and ask ourselves how we were truly feeling. And actually, the first word that popped into my mind was sad. So I guess I am feeling a little sad today. I'm not sure exactly why. I think there's a lot of reasons and no particular reason at the same time. I think I'm just feeling a little bit low energy. But also, that being said, I say all this because something I'm trying to work on is my crippling perfectionism. I can blame it on my Chiron and Virgo in the third house. So I'm definitely a perfectionist. And I think I often, even though I create content, I often wait until the quote-unquote perfect time to create something, or the perfect time to record, or I have to be at a certain energetic level, or whatever it may be. That's the way my perfectionism works. Like, there has to be, like, check marks of things being checked off in order for me to do something. And normally, right now, I think perfectionist Mal wouldn't approve of me recording this episode today, just because I feel like my energy is a little bit low. But if I kind of take a more objective viewpoint, I think if I do record this podcast by the end, I may feel a little bit better. So stay with me. Sorry if I'm sounding a little bit lower energy than usual, or a little less peppy or whatever, but I'm trying. And I still think these questions are really good, and I'm excited to answer them. And I just wanted to say again, I know this, I say this a lot, but thank you guys so much. Actually, Horoscope Witch turned 1 year old on August 8th. And I just can't believe I've been doing this podcast for a whole year. And when I started this podcast, as many of you know, I was just living in my little house in Malaysia. And I just started this podcast just to kind of keep track of my spiritual journey and keep track of what I was thinking at the time and what I was learning. And I think this podcast still holds this purpose. Now, of course, I'm aware that there are a lot more of you on the other end than I initially thought would ever listen to this. So again, thank you guys so much for listening. And thank you too for kind of growing with me and supporting me as I grew. Because when I started this podcast, I wasn't doing this work professionally. I had really just discovered tarot and studying tarot. And of course, I had been doing astrology for a while, but I hadn't considered myself to know enough to talk about astrology. And ever since the podcast, a couple things have changed. I moved back to the United States. I started working at a metaphysical shop as a psychic intuitive, and I became a Reiki practitioner, and I've also started my Etsy shop, and I've been being able to work with you guys, which is really the best part. I think it always makes me feel so happy when someone connects with me over this podcast and we feel like a good energetic match together, and to be able to do psychic work for my listeners specifically is honestly like my favorite part of this job. And I've been able to do tarot readings for my listeners who live in Australia and England. And even yesterday I did a natal chart reading for someone who was born in the Netherlands, and it was just so awesome. So I've really, really appreciated this opportunity, and I still view this podcast as just kind of something for me to document my spiritual journey, and something that allows me and you to kind of grow together as we walk this path together. So thanks for hanging out with me. That's all I wanted to say. And without further ado, let's take a look at these questions. So the famous question, someone asked me my take on how to trust that something is intuition and not anxiety. So I have touched on this before, and I know this is a really popular topic in the spiritual realm, because I think when we start trying to tune into our anxiety, when we start trying to tune into our intuition, all of us, I would even argue, I think all of us are met with the challenge. Is this my, you know, inner voice? Is this my intuition? Is this my higher self? Or is this my monkey mind anxiety? And I've talked about before how I can actually feel, they say follow your gut. That's really the only phrase that we're given, you know, that's the only phrase that's kind of accepted, I think, in generalized society when we're talking about intuition. Most people know the phrase follow your gut. So when I feel like a gut instinct, or like my gut is telling me like this is yes or no, I actually do feel it, like in my belly button area and also in my vagina. So that's like the sacral, the solar, and the root chakra. Those lower chakras, I typically will feel my intuition. But then if I feel like a contraction or like some stress in the heart chakra or the throat chakra, then I kind of feel like that's anxiety. Now that's kind of how I've learned to recognize how anxiety feels versus how gut feelings feel, and you may feel that differently on your body, but that's something that I've kind of kept track with over time. And I've talked about this before on a old podcast, I don't remember which episode, so sorry if I'm repeating myself. But also I do have to say, in general, I think it takes practice and time to trust yourself. And I think trusting yourself and your intuition is really a lifelong lesson. And from the moment we're born, I think society teaches us to lead entirely with fear and entirely with anxiety and entirely with monkey mind. So it's really hard to break out of that pattern. It's not like you can just buy a tarot deck and within a week, you know, you finally found your intuition and your inner voice and no more anxiety. Like you can really, no. Like I even doing this work professionally, that I still struggle with, separating intuition from anxiety a lot of the times. And it takes practice and it takes a lot of experience too. I would say when we start to develop our intuition, the thing about intuition, I feel like it's most of the time very neutral, whereas anxiety usually feels very fearful. And I think anything feeling neutral can be very foreign. And we may feel like, oh, I'm just like not used to, you know, tuning in and feeling like neutral about something. But oftentimes that's how intuition feels to me. It's not like a roaring emotion. It's a little bit more subdued. It's a little bit more quiet. Whereas anxiety will be that like really 0 to 100 feeling. Usually if I go 0 to 100 with something, I know it's anxiety. Like I know if I'm making a rash decision or jumping to a conclusion, or it's like that fight or flight kind of thing, that's anxiety. And one of the things too I've recognized over the past year with anxiety versus intuition for me is that anxiety, all of our anxiety probably has a common storyline. And what do I mean by that? I think, for instance, I struggle with some social anxiety. So if there's like a situation where I'm having social anxiety, I know there's a common thread of what will run through my mind, right? It might be like, oh, I'm afraid that I'm going to be sick while I'm out in public, or I'm afraid of this or that. And I start to recognize, oh, I've had this thought before. I've had this thought before at least a million times. And I know that this common thread of thoughts is something that my anxiety would say. So I know it's not necessarily my intuition telling me not to go to that social situation. It's more that common thread of anxiety that runs underneath. So that's something that's helped me just recognize like the things that anxiety tells us. If your anxiety constantly tells you, you know, you're not good enough or you shouldn't speak up, you know that's a common thread. You know that's not intuition. Also, intuition doesn't deplete us. Intuition doesn't try to beat us down or make us smaller. And I think anxiety typically does that. So keep that in mind. And overall, I always go back to the Women Who Run With the Wolves quote, Clarissa Pinkola Estes. You know, intuition develops with constant practice. And that's why I think tarot is the fastest way to develop your intuition. If you get a tarot deck and you just pull a card every morning and journal about it and see what comes through, you will develop your intuition over time. So it takes practice. It does need to be part of your schedule or your regimen in some way. And we also have to keep track of the times that we did sort of follow our intuition over anxiety. And think back to that, because I remember when I was leaving for my year away traveling, when I was leaving for Malaysia, of course, my anxiety was telling me not to go, right? Of course it was. Of course I was terrified of anything and everything that my anxiety could think of. Yet there was an intuitive feeling that, no, I know I'm meant to go. I know I've meant to have that experience. And alas, I was meant to have that experience, and I can't imagine not having gone. So I always think back to that moment where I chose my intuition over fear and how it played out so well for me. And I try to keep that in the back of my head when I'm sort of juggling between anxiety and intuition on a daily basis. I'm kind of thinking like, okay, anxiety tends to be a bully. Anxiety tends to be that whispering voice in your ear that tells you to be scared. Intuition wants you to be on your higher path. Intuition is a little bit more, it's not as pushy. So I hope that helps a little bit. Those are just some tips. And I think overall, spark notes, you know, learning to tell the difference between anxiety and intuition, I think you almost have to get familiar with how your anxiety sounds. And you have to get familiar with the stories that your anxiety is telling you first, so you get to recognize the difference between the two. And after a while, you know, after the practice comes, you will start to recognize, okay, that is an intuitive feeling. Okay, so thank you for whoever asked that, and thank you for inquiring about my opinion, because I know there's a lot of material on this out there. So definitely don't just trust what I'm saying. Definitely go and see what other people are saying about that topic too, because there's certainly so much content about intuition versus anxiety. So question number two, How do you handle loneliness when walking the spiritual path? I often feel like society is shallow and cut off, and it's hard to go in depth with people, especially when dating, which is something I want you to touch on. And in general, how do you work to cultivate a deeper spiritual relationship with people? Whew, okay, first of all, thank you so much for asking this question, and I just want to tell all of my listeners, every single person that's listening to this, I feel lonely all the time on a spiritual path. So if you feel like you're the only one who is lonely, you are absolutely not. I actually don't know one person on the spiritual path who doesn't feel lonely. And I think if you are empathic in some way, if you're empathic and you're interested in spirituality, we probably all share some similar personality traits, right? I would say it's not a stretch to say that most empaths are introverted. I would say most empaths probably have social anxiety to some extent. And most empaths also hate small talk. So I think if you're an introvert with social anxiety and you hate small talk and you're an empath and you feel other people's energy and you're like a sponge to the energy of the room or energy of the other people that you're with, I would say of course you're going to feel lonely at times, because I think also I'm constantly put in a situation, nobody's putting me in this situation but myself, and I think I sort of have to stop having like such a bad attitude about it, what I'm about to say, but I often catch myself thinking that I've made a choice in a way, like because I've chosen like a more spiritual path where I'm, you know, a practitioner, I'm a healing facilitator, I do the tarot, I do all other stuff too, and I often feel like I've chose that over being like a quote-unquote normal 24-year-old, because in choosing that spiritual path, I've chosen not to do what the normal 24-year-old would be doing, which is probably like going out, having fun with your friends, drinking, going to bars, doing this stuff, la 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 la. Well, that kind of stuff actually deters me from my path, and it keeps me from making the choices that are in my highest good. So yet, you know, I feel like I'm choosing my highest path, yet it's sort of coming at a price, because in no other time in my life have I felt so isolated, and I've felt like so, like I don't speak the same language as most people. Now, it's funny because just the other day, I was telling this to my friend who lives in New York, and we were texting and we were talking about how both of us were feeling kind of lonely in a way. And she said, "Wow, I'm surprised you feel like that, because I would have never guessed that you have trouble like cultivating that spiritual relationship with people because you're so good at talking about it on the podcast." And I said, you know, well, or at least I thought, I was like, yeah, like, no duh. Like, that's why I made a freaking podcast, because I don't feel like I have that many people to talk about this stuff with on a daily basis. Now, I will say that, you know, how do we work to cultivate a deeper spiritual relationship with people? That's a good question. I do have to say that when I first started like getting into this stuff, and especially when I first started working at a metaphysical shop at the end of 2018, I was so like thirsty for like spiritual friends. And I was so excited that like working in a metaphysical shop would give me that sort of spiritual community that I was looking for. And I was just like, oh yes, like all I want is like witchy friends to talk about astrology with and spirituality with. And I want, you know, the people who want to talk about tarot, and I'm so excited. And, you know, it's not to say this experience could be for everyone, but at least for me, I've just kind of realized that the quote-unquote spiritual people, the quote-unquote metaphysical people, they're just regular people, and they all have, like, the same we all have the same problems and the same issues at the end of the day. And I think, like, having the spiritual friends or the witchy friends, it's like anything else. Just because you share a hobby or a talent with a person, like, just because I'm psychic and another person is psychic, that doesn't mean we're going to get along, and that doesn't mean that we're gonna share the same morals and values as each other. So I say that because for this question asker, I don't want you to have this like facade in your mind that you're sort of missing out on, you know, having a bunch of people who are spiritual, and there's this like magical unicorn land where everybody, you're gonna find a group where everybody's gonna get you, and life just isn't like that. And I hate to be so pessimistic, but I think instead of setting out and trying to cultivate spiritual people or spiritual friendships, I think in general, we should just cultivate relationships where you and a friend, or you and your lover, or whatever it is, that we're just both simply working on ourselves in whatever way we know how. Maybe for you, it's in a spiritual way. Maybe for them, it's that they're going to counseling and they're trying to become more self-aware. I think in general, we just, all of us need to be more self-aware, and all of us need to be a little bit maybe more concerned with working on ourselves. And just remember that just because someone, you know, knows what a crystal is, and just because you can talk about, yeah, like a rose quartz or like a black tourmaline with someone, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be a good friend to you. And I think that's the facade that sometimes the spiritual community puts up. And again, just because you play basketball, if you walk into a room with 100 other basketball players, you're going to find a couple people that you vibe with. And that probably has nothing to do with the fact that you both enjoy basketball. It has something to do with the fact that you share the same morals and values with that person. And that's really what makes a genuine friendship. It's not necessarily about the spiritual stuff and the witchy stuff. And to this day, still, like, my best friends who have always been there for me and have supported me, they have no interest in doing magic, and they don't necessarily speak astrology. Of course, they know the basics because they hang out with me, but they don't speak it, you know, to an extent that I do, and they don't do magic, like I said, and they don't know how to read tarot, and that's fine. And those people are still there for me, and I think it's about, you know, wanting that. That is way more valuable than having someone else be there for you who also reads tarot, but you maybe they're not a great friend. I don't know. Maybe you disagree, and I could totally be wrong, but this has been my experience thus far. Now, I will touch on the dating thing too, like dating while you're on a spiritual path or like interested in this kind of jazz. I think for you yourself, you have to decide what you really want and what you're really available to compromise on, because at the end of the day, especially if you are, let's say, a straight passing woman interested in straight cis men, in my experience there has not been a lot of straight cis men who are interested or on any sort of quote-unquote spiritual path. So you have to decide what you're willing to compromise on. And I think I've considered this for myself, but you have to think, like, well, what if you find someone and they don't necessarily identify as spiritual, but what if they're a genuinely good person and they're at least interested in what you have to say, and to, they're at least interested in learning about what you are interested in. Is that enough? Because for me, that is enough, actually. I'm not necessarily looking for someone in general who reads tarot or who's a psychic or who, you know, is a astrology obsessed. I'm just looking for someone who cares to know me and who cares to get to know the things that I like. And at the end of the day, if I feel like there's at least a genuine interest coming from them, then it doesn't really matter if they're not into the woo-woo stuff like I am, if that makes sense. But for you, it could be different. You could say, you know, I get what Mal's saying, but at the end of the day, I just want a man who loves tarot and wants to get tarot readings from me and loves astrology, and I'm not willing to accept anything less than that. And I would say all power to you. You have to decide that for yourself. That's really all I want. I just want someone who respects my beliefs and is interested in knowing what I need. I will have to say, though, I would have trouble dating someone who straight up says, like, I don't believe in astrology or I don't believe in spirituality. There definitely has to be some kind of belief in the other side. Just because if someone is an atheist or someone believes that astrology is a bunch of BS, they really can't vibe with me, right? They can't be on my frequency. And how am I supposed to come home at the end of the day and talk about, you know, oh, I talked to this person's dead grandma today and it was so great? How am I supposed to say that to a person who doesn't believe in the other side, you know? So it's a learning experience, and I would say you learn as you go, and you have to give people a chance. Some people will surprise you, and you just have to give people a chance. You have to go at it with an open heart in general, and know that you're not the only one. You're not the only one who feels like some sense of loneliness on the path. So I hope that helped in some way. And I don't know if I have like a recipe for you to like meet more spiritual people. If that's really what you're looking for, you could find like your local metaphysical shop and see if they have any meetups, or you could try to find like an astrology meetup group or a tarot meetup group or whatever it may be, and that could help. But again, what I said about the basketball thing, just because everybody likes basketball doesn't mean you're going to be, and you like basketball, it doesn't mean you're going to be friends with everybody who likes basketball. So that's all I got to say about that. Okay, so the next question is, I'm a sun in Virgo, Leo moon, and Libra rising. I also have the sun in the 12th house. What is your take on this? So I like this question, and I wanted to take the opportunity to sort of talk about the 12th house in general and what we can do with our 12th house placements. So if you know that you have a planet in the 12th house, that planets in the 12th house, they all have kind of a similar undertone. The 12th house is the most mysterious and hard to understand house in the entire astrological wheel, in my opinion. And I've talked about the houses before, right? I have an episode on the houses. So in one of those episodes, I probably talked about how the 12th house is ruled by Pisces. And the 12th house, because it's ruled by Pisces, it kind of has to do with the subconscious. It has to do with the things that we might not be fully aware of. And any of the planets that are in the 12th house, the way I see it, they may be sort of kept secret. In a way, in some shape or form. Now, you kind of have to pay attention to the degrees, because it's possible to have a planet at the very, very end of your 12th house. Let's say it's within 1 degrees of the rising sign. That planet is probably still quote unquote rising. So if a planet is rising or very close to the ascendant line, that planet is actually going to be quite visible. Whereas if a planet is more near the 11th 12th house cusp line and it's more at the beginning of the 12th house, I would say that planet is going to be kept sort of secret in a way, sort of underneath the waters. Now, people with their sun in the 12th house in general, they usually are met with sort of an internal struggle with wanting recognition and also wanting to remain unnoticed at the same time. Sometimes life can kind of feel like at times they want to be center stage and other times they kind of want to be sitting in the back row of the theater. And it's kind of a tough dichotomy to grapple with. I would say that Sun in the 12th house, especially Sun in Virgo in the 12th house, I would say that one of your challenges is to let yourself be seen for who you truly are. You might try to keep, especially with that Virgo undertone with your Sun, you might try to keep your flaws, or you might try to keep the amount you criticize yourself very secret. There might be a pressure on you to come into this world as like perfectly buttoned up, and you sort of want, you don't want people to perceive you as like problematic, or you don't want people to perceive you as even having tough emotions at times. So I would say that as a Sun in Virgo in the 12th house, you do need to let yourself be seen for you who you truly are, even if sometimes that's, you know, not the prettiest thing. And I think you also have to learn that I think the people who love you the most are those who take the time to investigate who you truly are, but also know that there's times in life where you can't always expect people to investigate. Sometimes you need to also open your heart. It takes two to tango. And I think, especially with that Leo moon, although I don't know where it's placed in your chart, the Leo moon is a huge presence of emotions. It's almost like your emotions are oftentimes on center stage. Yet with the Sun in Virgo in the 12th house, maybe the ego doesn't want that. Yet your emotions end up boiling over and taking advantage of you at the end of the day anyways. So I would say that finding a good outlet for expressing your emotions in some way, it could even be like an improv class or an acting class or a painting class or something. Something that can kind of like let you be on center stage in a way, but in a quiet way. If you get what I'm saying, that could be really good for you. And there were other things too that I was kind of picking up about you. You may attract kind of over-the-top friends. If you have heavy 12th house placements, you could be subconsciously attracting people to sort of live out who you would like to be. So it's sort of like, let's say you've always dreamed about, I'm not saying this is you, but let's say you've always dreamed about being a tarot reader, yet you don't feel like you could ever live up to that. But let's say your best friend is a tarot reader and you sort of live vicariously through them. Be careful about living vicariously through others. Make sure you're also living your truth. Again, the 12th house placements have a tendency to sort of project themselves out onto other people and other things. So that's kind of my take on your mix. And if you did want to learn more about the 12th house in general, and this is for everybody, all of my astrology studiers, there's a really good book on the 12th house by Tracy Marks. I'll put it in the show notes. It's called Your Secret Self, Illuminating the Mysteries of the 12th House. And it's also a guide to using astrology and your dreams for personal growth. So half the book talks about 12th house and 12th house placements, and the other half of the book talks about dream interpretation, which is, of course, very poignant because the 12th house rules dreams as well. So yeah, that's my take on the Sun in the 12th house placement. So another astrology question, which I found interesting. This person says, I was born on the cusp of Cancer and Leo, literally 3 hours before the sun went into Leo, but I identify so much more with Leo. So just to clarify, this person was born technically in Cancer season, but she's saying the sun was in Cancer, but 3 hours later it turned into Leo. So technically she's a Cancer, but she's saying she identifies so much more with Leo. I asked my mom about it, and she said that my birth was medically induced, but she said I probably was supposed to be born anywhere from hours to weeks ahead of time. What are your thoughts on this? How can I find out my true natal chart? Okay, and then she included her birth time. She was born on July 22nd, but I'll keep the year and the time, secret in case she doesn't want that information out there. So here's what I think of this. So it's funny because other people have asked me similar questions. Like, I had my coworker ask me the other day, like, well, my due date was supposed to be this, but I was born actually 2 weeks after my due date. So would my true astrology chart actually be like my due date, or would it be my actual chart? And my answer is always, your true natal chart is when you were born, is the time you were born. I don't really buy into any sort of like, oh, you know, you're actually the chart of your due date or whatever. That doesn't ever really make sense to me. And it's simple, even if you use, like, if I use this metaphor, like, if you order a package from FedEx and you're checking the shipping, you're tracking the shipping, and it says it should be delivered at 2 p.m. on Monday, and you go outside and the package isn't there, it wasn't delivered. And let's say it doesn't end up getting delivered until 2 hours later at 4:30 p.m. Then the package was delivered at 4:30 p.m., right? You can't open the package before it's there, right? If it's there, it's there, and if it's not, it's not. I think that's how it goes with being born. Like, know that your birth chart is just a compilation of karma. And there's no such thing as an accident. There's no such thing as a coincidence. Everything happens in divine timing. So if for some reason your soul did not come into this planet until 2 hours or 2 weeks after the doctor told your mom that you were going to be born, it was for a reason, right? Know that your chart is the perfect compilation of all the karma that you've accumulated throughout all your lifetimes, and you've agreed to bring all of this in and be born on the exact time that you were born. So I would say your question, how do I find my true natal chart? Well, your true natal chart is, I would say, along with the time that is printed on your birth chart. And when you were born, you were born. Here's what I think about cusps, and I have said this on a past episode, but I think it's been a while. Again, I don't really believe in cusps, but I will tell you why you feel a little bit more Leonian than you do Cancerian. Now, when I was looking at your chart, actually, it's interesting because anybody who was born on a cusp, they're probably, or definitely, you may be like 28, 27, 28, 29 degrees of the last degrees of your sign, right? So these are the people that feel like I'm on the cusp. So you, the person that I'm talking to that was born on July 22nd, you are a 29 degrees Cancer sun. And then, so you were literally born in the last degree of Cancer. Now, I have to say, the last degree of Cancer, 29 degrees Cancer, is no more and no less legitimate than, let's say, 17 degrees Cancer, right? So you are very much a Cancerian person, I would argue. Your Mercury and your Venus are also in Cancer. Plus, I was looking at your chart, you have arguably not one, not two, but three grand water trines in your chart. Your North Node is also in Scorpio. So I would actually argue that you are quite a watery person. You are quite a Cancerian person. Maybe because you're only, I think, 24. You have to know that it takes a full 33 years to actually grow into your natal chart. So you may still be growing into the Cancerian self. But I would argue that you do definitely have that heavy water, heavy Cancer energy in your chart. Now, here's where you may be picking up on that Leo stuff. I don't think it's because you were on the cusp of Leo, but I think it's because, which is interesting, listen to this. Guys, stay with me because this is really interesting about her chart. Her moon, which is in Gemini, is in her fifth house. Who rules the fifth house? Leo. Right? So when the moon is in the fifth house, I think sometimes your emotions can be so big. You just need and want to be in the spotlight in some way. And I think also you need others just as much as you need to be needed by others, if that makes sense. And those two qualities are very Leonian. And we tend to live out our moon sign more heavily when we're younger, in our early 20s and in our childhood, all throughout up until our Saturn return hits when we're like 28, 29. Those first 28, 29 years of life, we spend sort of living more in our moon sign. So again, if your moon is in Gemini in the fifth house, which again, the natural ruler of the fifth house is Leo, I wouldn't be surprised that you feel a little bit Leonian. Well, you're living in that fifth house, right? And then also, I found it interesting that your Cancer Sun, again, your 29 degrees Cancer Sun, it resides in your seventh house. Now, I noticed that your seventh house is actually intercepted. Now, when we have an intercepted house, it means that an entire sign, entire 30 degrees of a sign is sort of sandwiched in the middle of a house. So in other words, that meat of the sandwich doesn't have like a house cusp. I hope that makes sense. So your meat of your seventh house is Leo and your sun is in the seventh house. As well as your Mercury. So I would say when you have an intercepted house with Leo, there's sort of a, but yet you're a Cancer Sun, I would say in your life, you're kind of experiencing a contradiction with your personality. I think on the one hand, you may be an outgoing people person, and then on the other hand, you're deeply introverted and sensitive and need time alone. On the one hand, you need to be around others. On the other hand, you really need that introverted, isolated time. So I would actually say right now in your life, don't discount that Cancerian part of your nature. Again, remember, your soul chose to be a Cancer for a very specific reason. And there was no mistake. You were born in that last degree of Cancer for a very specific reason. So I would say, you know, start diving into that Cancerian part of yourself. Dive deeper into your intuition and getting to know your emotional landscape, because that's definitely part of your soul's path. And just for fun, let's read. I have my Sabian symbols book here, and let's read the Sabian symbol for 29 degrees Cancer. If you don't know what a Sabian symbol is, they're basically they're channeled images from an astrologer. I think they lived in like the 80s. I don't remember their name. But they channeled images for each degree of each sign. And that the image may relate to your life in some way. So for your 29 degrees Cancer, the image is a muse weighing twins. I don't quite know what that means. A muse weighing twins. This is a symbol of man's continual, if not always evident, relationship with the over-reality in which he lives and moves and has his being here given an emphasis on the side of his inner reconciliations. Okay, so in English, what I'm actually getting with this amuse weighing twins is that you're constantly going to be weighing that part of yourself that wants to be that outgoing people person and that other part of yourself that's more of that homebody, needs time alone. You're sort of that extroverted introvert or that introverted extrovert. And I'm getting that your entire lifetime, you're going to be having to weigh these two things out. But alas, you know, maybe another astrologer will tell you differently, but for me and my perspective, I think you're very much a Cancer and you were meant to be a Cancer. And yeah, I don't believe in cusps. And I know a lot of astrologers argue about this. For instance, in the book, The Only Astrology Book You'll Ever Need by Joanne Martine Woolfolk, she has a whole chapter about cusps. Yet for me, I don't buy into the cusp, and it goes back to the FedEx thing. If the package is either delivered or it's not for me. I don't know. The sun is either here or it's not. And that just is what it is. But another astrologer might tell you differently. So I would encourage you, if what I'm saying isn't vibing with you, you don't have to agree with me. And I don't have to necessarily be, you know, the astrologer that you go to for everything. So yeah. That's what that is. So another question is, what is something you wish your clients knew? And that was interesting. I didn't exactly know how to answer this or like what I wish people knew. I mean, I would hope that my clients know that I'm not perfect and I make so many mistakes and I'm on a healing journey too. And also, I would hope that people know that I seek spiritual guidance through other psychics I know and also through therapy. And in order to do this work, I have to do an immense amount of healing on myself. So I guess I hope I never come off as someone who is like, oh, I'm perfectly healed and I have everything sorted out and I know everything and I'm so wise. And I just don't feel that way. I'm making mistakes every single day and I'm learning as I go on. And also the other thing is I have a lot of trouble at times taking my own advice. If you follow me on Instagram, you may read my like daily messages or my daily polls when I post pictures of the tarot cards. And there are times like, what you guys have to know is that's literally coming straight out of my life. And that's coming straight from spirit too. So a lot of those messages are spiritual messages for me specifically. And I'm just putting them out there because I know other people might relate to them too. So just in the premise of those spiritual messages being for me, of course, I'd be struggling with it. You know, I really struggle to take my own advice sometimes. And let's say if my spiritual message for the day is learn to trust yourself and learn to trust the process, well, I'm only getting that message from spirit because I am deeply in a moment of mistrust. I am deeply mistrusting myself in that way. So again, it's kind of like this weird like dichotomy. If I'm saying, you know, trust in the path, it's probably because in that moment I'm really not trusting in the path. And it's not that I'm a hypocrite, but I also think that, you know, I'm human, and sometimes I don't take my own advice, and I sure hope someone is, because sometimes I have trouble, but sometimes I do. So it's just it is what it is. It is the path, right? And one of the other things I wanted to say, something that I wish my clients knew, I feel like one of my life purposes is to sort of change how we perceive like a psychic healer or perceive the word psychic or just perceiving this job in general. And I think there's so many stereotypes about like being a gypsy and being a fortune teller that I really, really hate. I think sometimes it does make me uncomfortable when people treat me that way, like asking me like what's gonna happen in the future or You know, what is this or what is that or what's down the road? And I think society in general is still really stuck in this assumption, I guess, that being a psychic or being a healer is somehow linked to like telling the future or even like with that gypsy stereotype. When you think of, I'm sorry if I'm offending anybody with the term gypsy. Of course, I never call anybody that and I don't identify as a gypsy, but just for the stereotype, like what is a gypsy? Well, the stereotype of a gypsy is someone who you know, maybe is like a charlatan, like takes people's money and gives them, you know, spiritual advice that isn't necessarily in their highest good and just is kind of doing this work for money. And also someone who's on the road and isn't necessarily themselves financially abundant and they're kind of working from a place of like sneakiness or almost like the Seven of Swords I'm seeing. So that's also a huge stereotype that practitioners, psychic practitioners are breaking and I think need a break for themselves because we're all sort of deciding and realizing that, no, like I should be able to make money and honest money through this work because if I'm honestly helping people and I'm honestly pushing people in their highest good and helping them, you know, on their path in any way, you know, I do deserve an energetic exchange for that. And there's no need to be sneaky or not do your work with integrity. And I don't really know what I'm trying to say, but I guess I just hate that stereotype that, you know, psychics are, you know, just telling you a bunch of BS. And even, you know, in a metaphysical shop, I think I can control who I'm attracting more through Horoscope Witch and through my Etsy shop. And I know typically the people who are coming to me for readings there are truly interested in cultivating like a greater sense of self-awareness and working on themselves. And most people on there are really on the spiritual path and are connecting to me in some way. Whereas sometimes working in a metaphysical shop, it's not just my energy. It's the energy of the shop in general too. So some of the clients that I will get there, especially older generation, they just assume that, you know, I'm a gypsy fortune teller and I'm not. And that sometimes bothers me. And it feels like, oh, sometimes it just feels like I'm constantly fighting against that stereotype. But alas, that's kind of the challenge that I face doing this work right now. Next question. When did you realize you had psychic abilities? So I don't know. I feel like a lot of psychics or a lot of intuitives have these like amazing paranormal stories of how they were a kid and they saw ghosts or they talked to dead people. I don't really have that at all. I just think I was always attracted to metaphysical stuff and I was always an introvert who kind of kept to myself. But I would say it wasn't really until I started reading tarot that I realized what it felt like to have an intuitive hit or a psychic hit about something. And I started to realize that I have some sort of, I think they would call it claircognizance. I don't know. I don't really buy into like labeling myself with the clairs, like clairaudience, like hearing messages, or clairvoyant, seeing things, or claircognizance is like knowing things. But for lack of a better term, I did start to realize when I was reading tarot that there were just some things that I just knew and I didn't necessarily know how I knew them. And I realized that there had been times in my life where there were times that I just knew something. And I didn't know how I knew it. Like something, God, I hope to God she never listens to this, but something I felt when I was little with my babysitter, I felt like I knew that her boyfriend was cheating on her. And that ended up being true. Now, I never said anything, but there was just like little moments of just knowing that would come about. Or also an example I give is to this day, like when I hear an ambulance, and I've always done this since I was little, I hear an ambulance going off and I kind of know who they're going to. And I remember always like praying as a little kid, like I'd hear the ambulance and I would pray for whoever they were going to. And that was just like, that was kind of the history of me, I don't know, being psychic, but never realizing I was. And I have to say that it wasn't until I started doing this work professionally that I really gave myself permission to call myself a psychic intuitive. And it's something that I still feel torn about, just because, again, there's so many assumptions that come with the word psychic. And I don't want people to come to me thinking that I can tell their future, because that's never my goal. My goal is to just actually be more of a present teller than anything else. And I always believe that we have free will. And I also believe that every single person who's listening to this, every single person on this planet has some kind of psychic and intuitive abilities, because we're all connected to the divine. So I always believe, I don't believe I'm special. I believe every single person has the ability to develop their intuition and their psychic ability in some way. And again, I'm always a proponent that I think tarot is the fastest way to develop your intuition. But of course, if there's another divination tool that you feel more connected to, you know, you should go after that. But at least for me, that is really where I figured out, like, okay, I have intuition, I have psychic downloads. And I will say that Reiki, learning Reiki and becoming a Reiki practitioner, has helped me open up my abilities a lot. So I would say my mediumship abilities, I'm still developing, but I would say it wasn't until I kind of became attuned with the Reiki energy that helped me open my intuition, my third eye, my crown chakra even more. So if you've ever been interested in energy healing in some way, I'm always a proponent. I love Reiki, and I think finding a Reiki practitioner or a Reiki master teacher, specifically Usui Reiki, is the traditional Japanese energy healing that I recommend to people. So if you're looking to develop your intuition and you're not feeling drawn to cards, or you're not feeling drawn to astrology, energy healing and taking a Reiki class can definitely be beneficial as well. So, okay, next question. When you are reading for someone, do you ever feel like it's best to keep something you saw from them? No, because I feel like it's my responsibility to tell them how I feel. Granted, there are some questions that I won't answer. Like if you ask me, like, is my boyfriend cheating on me, or should I get a divorce, or should, like, any big decisions that, like, you know, I don't know, any big decisions, I won't necessarily answer. There may be a way that I feel about something, but also, like, for instance, if it's a hard situation, and let's say someone's dealing with, like, should I stay or should I go in my marriage, there might be an intuitive feeling that I feel about that person. But you have to always remember, you're reading their energy too. So if I feel, I'm just reading what they're giving me, and I'm just reflecting back what their guides are telling me. And ultimately, it's not my job as a reader to answer your most undying questions. I think it's my job as a reader to validate you, actually, in what you're feeling and what your gut is telling you. So it's sort of like, it's not that I'm keeping things that I see from them, but I'm also never going to be, it's not ethical for me as a reader to say, yes, you should break up with this person. Yes, you should leave your job. Yes, you should do this. Because I may feel that way, but also I'm never trying to take power away from my client. I'm trying to empower them to make the decision. And if I'm making a decision for them, that's putting the power in my hands. And that's never the kind of facilitator or practitioner that I want to be. I always want to be the person who is giving the power back to them. So I may say, well, here's what my guides are telling me and here's what I'm seeing. But at the end of the day, you always have a choice, and you always have a choice to work on it or leave, or whatever it may be. Now, I will say, though, there are some things, especially with younger clients, there's a common thread of questions like, what is my purpose, or what career should I have, or what will my life become? Questions like that. And honestly, sometimes my guides genuinely don't show me anything of that because there's too much to be decided on the other end. And I mean, the client, in the client's world, and the client kind of has to make decisions and experiment. And sometimes I'm just not meant to know. And it's because the client's not meant to know. So for an example, you know, again, not to give away any personal details of this specific reading, but and I'll try to keep it as vague as possible, but there was a person maybe a month ago who came in, and they were kind of like just finishing college, and they were asking me, you know, the questions, what is my purpose? What should I do? What's my career path? And spirit wasn't really showing me any sort of direction. And I just felt like, I was like, bam, that's the answer. Like, you're not supposed to necessarily have a direction at this time. I think this is a time for you to sort of experiment. And it's honestly not the right time for you to find what you're meant to do. It's more of a time to sort of, again, dip your toe into a bunch of things. It's a time to get a job that, you know, just pays the bills for now. And maybe it's a fun, like, more of a casual job, like, not saying waitressing is fun, but I said maybe it's just you getting a waitressing job or something like that, and meeting people and talking to people and making new connections and having a job that allows you to do other things too and experiment and all that stuff. So at the end of the day, what am I trying to say? There are just some times in life that we're not meant to know the next step, and we're supposed to be sort of hanged man. We're supposed to be surrendering. We're supposed to be sort of experimenting and dipping our toe into a bunch of things. And my guides will let me know that. And that's not necessarily the answer that clients want, but I think also it benefits them more in the long run. Because if I just said, oh yeah, my guides are telling me that you're going to do this, that kind of makes it easy, and that ruins the journey of life, right? And I don't think that's necessarily a psychic's job. A psychic is there to guide you and empower you. They're not there to give you all the answers. So yeah, that's kind of about it for that question. And then for the last one, someone just asked, kind of for a witchy tip. So they said, I'd love to know more about candle magic. So I would say candle magic is pretty simple. Obviously, you need a candle and you need fire. I usually buy like little tiny spell candles from like local metaphysical shop. The ones that are about like, I don't know, 4 or 5 inches, like the little skinny ones. And I like those smaller spell candles because you can burn them all at once. For me, it's kind of important if I'm ever doing some sort of candle magic. I kind of want the entire candle to burn down, because then I feel like the spell is activated, if that makes sense. So that's why I opt for like a little bit of a smaller candle, because then it won't take so long to burn down. And you can use it's all about your intuition too. I think a candle magic spell is a really good spell for a baby witch. First, you want to decide on your intention. What is the intention of this candle? Are you trying to cultivate a better job? Are you trying to call in a better job? Are you trying to call in just having more energy? Are you trying to call in focus? Are you trying to call in forgiveness? Are you trying to do cord cutting? Something like that. You want to decide what is your intention, because that is the most important part. And then you want to decide the color that goes with your intention. So let's say you're deciding, I really need to cord cut from this situation. I really need to do some cord cutting, a little bit of banishing. I need to remove what no longer serves me from this situation. So in that situation, I would actually choose a black candle, because black candles tend to be meant for banishing. And maybe I would also throw in a white candle too. Maybe I would burn the black and white at the same time. One candle, the black candle, its purpose is to banish. And then the white candle's purpose is to bring healing and bringing love to the situation so you can heal from the situation. So again, picking your color first. Then I would say the other options would be anointing the candle with any oils that you may find are relevant to your purpose, if that makes sense. So let's say if this candle is for abundance, you're trying to draw in, let's say more money or more just abundance in general, maybe you're going to choose an oil that also has the metaphysical property of abundance. So something like cinnamon oil or ginger oil or frankincense oil, something like that, and you're going to anoint the candle with that oil, and that can add a little bit more pizzazz to your spell. You could also sprinkle on some herbs onto your candle. So let's say you are doing a candle magic spell for self-love. So maybe you're choosing a pink candle and you're anointing this candle with let's say patchouli for love and that kind of romantic energy. And the herb you could pick would be like crumbled up rose petals or crumbled up hibiscus or even cinnamon, ground up cinnamon, things like that you can put on the candle. And then another option too would be carving sigils into the candle. So let's say, again, let's go back to this abundance idea. Let's say you're doing a candle magic spell for abundance. Maybe you want to carve in the sigil for Jupiter, because Jupiter is this planet of good luck and good fortune. Or maybe you want to carve in your own sigil that you make in order to sort of infuse that intention of abundance into the candle. And then I would say you definitely want to sort of infuse the energy and the intention into this candle, whether that's holding it in your hands while you're meditating on what you want to bring in, maybe it's you can kind of breathe three times into the candle. That's something that I do. And, or you could also just speak into the candle. Like, I'm trying to draw in this, or I am in full agreement of me drawing in abundance, or I agree that with this spell, I will cultivate a greater sense of self-love and self-peace, whatever it is. Now, I would say you can't really go wrong with candle magic, but you can go wrong with every kind of spell, right? Because it's also energy. So before any candle magic thing that I'm doing, I usually ask my guides, like, I usually just say, I wish to do no harm with this spell. And I also usually say, I wish this to be a equal exchange of energy. So I don't wish to take more than I'm giving, and I don't wish to give more than I take. Because remember, magic is just energy. And there's always a consequence to energy that we're trying to cultivate. So it's kind of like if you've ever seen someone win the lottery and then they like spend all their money and they totally end up in turmoil, that's almost like an abundance candle, an abundance spell gone wrong, right? That's a prime example of money and at least everything on this planet just being energy. And we have to be careful of how we're cultivating energy. And remember, I would say keep it simple. Candle magic is best done being kept simple, and also having it be more about you and not someone else. Even if you're trying to cord cut from someone, I would say you make the intention with, you know, maintaining your own sense of peace. Because again, you never know the energy that's going to come back to you. And I don't ever think we should, people may disagree with this, but I really never use magic to do harm. I only use it to sort of, and I use it sparingly too. I use magic sparingly to manifest the things that are in my highest good. And yeah, I hope that helps. So colors, oils, herbs, carving symbols, carving sigils, your words and your intention and your energy, all of those things can help when you're doing a candle magic spell. So alrighty, I think those are all the questions that I have for you today. So thank you guys so much for listening and all of your kind words. And I've just enjoyed so much connecting with you. And all of the information that you need to know about me is in the show notes. And I'll see you guys for the next episode, which will be our Virgo season special. So have a great rest of Leo season. Have a great full moon in Aquarius, and I'll talk to you guys next time.